And for today, we are, if you recall, in the middle of a series. I'm trying to theme a little bit the shirim that we're giving at the moment through these last few weeks and next few weeks to Sefer Bereishis. This is a bit of a treat for me because I'm never normally here at this time of year. I'm always traveling in November and December, so I never get to give any shirim at this time of year. This is the first time. In fact, I just realized this morning this is the longest time I think in my entire life that I've not been in England, which I don't suppose is a terrible thing, really. To be in Eretz Yisrael is much better, but nevertheless, I think all of us have had changes to our lives over the last year, but with it comes the opportunity to do things like the shirim that we're doing now. So we're in the middle of a series on Noachides and general issues to do with Sefer Bereishis. Let me give you a little bit of a feel for what's going to be in the next few weeks. Today's shir is going to be very halachic. It's going to throw up a lot of fascinating questions. Next week's shir is going to be much more hashgafic. I want to look at the issue of the Avos and how they kept the Torah and why they kept the Torah and why that's relevant to us today. That's very important, why that has hashgafic implications for us today. And then I'd like to get onto a topic that I've never dealt with before and I haven't really heard many people dealing with, which is the issue of polygamy. Having more than one wife and pilakshim and concubines and all of that stuff, maybe just for a shir or two, because this is a topic which really resonates through Sefer Bereishis. And the question is, how does that work? What difference does that make? I was at a wedding recently. I officiated a wedding with a Sephardi ketubah, where the chatan promised to his wife that he promised her he would not marry another wife. Now, I never promised that in my ketubah because I'm Ashkenazi and I didn't need to. But how exactly that works on a lemaisa basis is very fascinating, which we'll dedicate a shir to in a couple of weeks, please God. But for now, we're on the issue of Noachides. I'd like to start the shir by thanking the sponsors for today's shir. The shir was very kindly sponsored. We have two sponsors. Firstly, Marty and Lainey Weisberg have sponsored the shir. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, Weisberg and not Weisberg. But Weisberg, in loving memory of their fathers, Moshe Yitzchak Ben Chaim Davis, and also Zeid Ben Yekusiel Yuda Weisberg. And their yahrzeits are this week in Kislev, the 3rd and the 6th of Kislev, respectively. Yes, Hashem, the shir should be an aliyah for their neshamas. And the sponsorship for the shir also continues to be, for the last few weeks as well, from Dr. and Mrs. Benjamin Sprecher, Le'ilu Nishmois, their dear parents, Shlomo Ben Aaron, Esther Bas Aaron, Asher Ben Avigda, and Esther Bas Meshulam Shmuel. So thank you to the Sprechers very much for their sponsorship, and again, thank you to the Weisbergs for theirs. If anyone's interested in sponsoring the Shia, then please be in touch with Mrs. Spivak. Also, if anybody is interested in being on the group that gets the source sheets in advance, then you can join that email group. That's now being, I think, quite helpful to people. David Hochhauser very kindly sends those out in advance. So please let him have your email. You can put it privately to him, OU Israel Center, on the chat, and he will include you in the group. Okay, what were we doing last week? So let's get the sheets up on the screen. Maybe I'll just share them one more time with the people on the chat so that everybody who just arrived will be able to get those sheets. Okay, just one second. Here they come again. They're all the same as they always were, but we're going to share the screen now and move into the topic. Second, there we are. Let's just do this. Okay, I hope you can all see my shared screen now. Let's just remind ourselves what we did last week. Last week we opened up with a discussion of the Noachide laws. Why these are important for Jews, what our obligations are to proselytize, if relevant, to the non-Jewish world, to help them to keep the Noachide laws. We talked about Chabad, we talked about other approaches, and we listed what the Noachide laws were, to enforce dinim, not to take God's name in vain, laws of idolatry, prohibited sexual activity, murder and injury, theft, and not eating a limb from a live animal. And we added to that there were some other suggestions to add to that, castrating an animal, we'll talk about that a little bit more today, witchcraft, certain kinds of crossbreeding, and the Gemara even goes so far as to say that there are 30, there are 30 dinim which apply to Noachides. It doesn't elaborate on them all, but it certainly gives us the idea that these are not just seven specifics, these are seven general principles. That we saw the Sefer HaChinuch last week, these are not seven laws, these actually include probably around 60 mitzvot, and we, don't forget, only have, practically speaking, around 240, even though there are 613 mitzvot, only around 240 apply on a daily basis. So actually the ratio between Jews and non-Jews is not perhaps what we thought it was, 613 to 7, it's much more like 240 to 60, and therefore the halachic system for non-Jews is actually quite important. And today what I want to look at is a mitzvah that we have, that they probably don't have, which is the mitzvah of Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver lo yisiten michshol, not to put a stumbling block before the blind, is one of the 613 mitzvot. And we'll see in the Gemara that its main focus, the initial focus of our Gemara, is how we relate to non-Jews. And in that sense, this is a halachic application of exactly what we're talking about, which is why do the Noahide laws matter to me as a Jew? And one of the answers we'll see today is because the way I treat non-Jews will impact on those laws. Now, we did deal with Lifnei Iver before. For those of you who have good memories, around 3 years ago, in Shirim 67 and 68, we looked at some practical Lifnei Iver questions. Now, I don't know if you can remember what we did 130 Shiurim ago, but if you want to go back into those, I've given you a link on the sheet to get to those on my website, and we went into a lot of the practical tshuvas that relate to Lifnei Iver in today's world with Jews, inviting people for Shabbos, selling non-kosher food to Jews, etc., etc. Today, as I said, I really want to focus on non-Jews, but let's just start maybe with a little array of the kind of issues that Lifnei Iver throws up. Again, Lifnei Iver lo yisiten michshol, meaning not to put a stumbling block in front of another person and cause them to do something which is bad for them. We'll see the mitzvah in a minute. So first of all, let's just look at a little few of the issues between Jews and Jews. I'm not going to speak about these in detail, but you can go back to those earlier shiurim. But I've listed them in categories. There are Shabbos issues. Again, I'm going to throw up questions and not give any answers. Not all of these are prohibited, but they're all questions. Inviting people to your home when you know they're going to drive on Shabbos, or to attend a Shabbaton for Kira, for outreach, when you know that they're going to arrive by car on Shabbos. What about giving directions? You're walking through Tel Aviv on Shabbos, a car stops and says, excuse me, do you know the way too? Okay? I was once walking up Golders Green Road many years ago, and a lady in a car on Shabbos morning, early in the morning, pulled up in a car. She obviously was on her way to shul with a big hat on, and said, do you know the way to Elif Gardens, which is the Reform shul round the corner? Interesting, Shaila. What do I say? Do I say no? Do I say yes? Do I say good Shabbos? Do I say, you know, to go to another? I'm not getting into that now, but that's an interesting question. What about just crossing the road on Shabbos so that a Jewish driver stops to let you cross the road? Is that okay? You made someone be Machal on Shabbos. Giving jobs to Jews to do that you know they're going to do on Shabbos. Giving a gift in a place where there's no Erev. Hiring a babysitter where she's going to be earning money against Hilchos Shabbos, Tzchar Shabbos. These are all questions. Kashrus questions. What about selling meat during the 9 days to Jews? What about selling non-kosher meat to non-observant Jews? Let's say you work in the supermarket and somebody comes through with a big leg of pork and says, I'd like to buy this, please. Are you allowed to put it through the checkout? Do you have to turn around and say, I'm sorry, I'm Jewish, you're Jewish, you shouldn't be eating pork, I'm not going to help you. You have to go to aisle 13, I'm afraid. Maybe aisle 13 would be a Jewish aisle, I don't know. But do you have to say that or not? What about selling clothes with shatnas in them to people that you know don't care about it? What about selling non-sanua clothes or giving them away to people who are going to wear them when they're not going to mind about that as well? As I said last week, what about if your non-observant boss asks you to run and get some non-kosher food for him? Are you allowed to do that? Even giving food to Jews who won't make brachot is a question, which is dealt with in Shulchan Aruch. Marriage issues come up. Can a rabbi officiate at a wedding when the couple will not keep Taras Mishpacha? Or is he giving a shtempel, if you like? He is encouraging this couple to do something that they're not allowed to do. Can you rent out a catering hall for a function with mixed dancing or with a non-kosher caterer? And what about shidduchim? Big Lifnei Iver questions. Many health issues, selling alcohol to underage children or people who will abuse it. Selling cigarettes. You know, if your parents ask you to pass them the packet of cigarettes, are you allowed to pass them, or do you have to say, I'm sorry, smoking is prohibited, I will not help you to do something which will damage your health? Interesting question. And there are many, many other issues. There are issues in the Israeli army. What if an observant soldier wants to switch duty on Shabbos with a non-observant soldier who will not keep Shabbos? Is that okay? What about an army officer telling a soldier to shave when he's going to use a razor? Is that okay? And I've listed other ones there as well. You can see here that this is a major issue, and we'll see the Rambam says this is a daily issue that we face as Jews, and therefore I think it's good for us to spend a little bit of time today focusing on the halachas of Lifnei Iver, with specific reference to non-Jews, but this applies, most of what we say applies generally today as well. So let's focus in on the issue of non-Jews. What are the issues that really affect, in Lifnei Iver, our relationship with non-Jews on a daily basis? So I've listed about 15 here. Are you allowed to pay a worker where you think that they're not going to pay tax? Now, that applies to Jews, but that applies to non-Jews as well. Non-Jews have a halachic obligation to pay tax. So if you know, oh, just pay me in cash, please, no receipts, is that okay or is that not okay? Are you allowed to build a temple which is going to be used for Avodah Zarah? As I mentioned last week, I know somebody who received a contract to supply the marble at the Hindu temple. Are you allowed to do that, or is that Lifnei Iver? I'm encouraging non-Jews to do something that they're not allowed to do. Letting somebody copy your homework when they're going to cheat on a test. A non-Jew's not allowed to cheat on a test. It's gazela, it's theft. It's geneva, actually. What about superstition? Listen to this interesting shaila. I'll just turn this off for a second. This shaila, the Chashukei Chemed, Rav Zilberstein, was asked this shaila. A fellow was a businessman, and his dad was very superstitious. And one day, he always used to go to his dad for a brocha before he got on the plane. And one day, as he went to his father for a brocha, a black cat walked across the path in front of them. And the father, who was very superstitious, looked at this cat and said, I'm not allowing you to go. You may not get on the plane. It's dangerous. And the son said, really, you know, it's ridiculous. You're not allowed to even be superstitious. It's against the Torah to do that, to change your plans based on that. So now the son has a problem. Does the son have to listen to the father? Keep it out of aim. Or is that somehow playing into this issue of superstition? You're not allowed to change your plans based on superstition. And was the father guilty of Lifnei Iver, of trying to get the son to do something which is based on superstition, which he's not allowed to do? By the way, the answer to that question, Rav Silberstein said that the son had to cancel his flight, interestingly, because he said the son's not doing anything based on superstition, he doesn't believe in it. And the father is guilty of Lifnei Iver, but the son has to cancel his flight. Interesting question. What about giving a bribe? We talked about that a little bit last week. Teaching Torah to non-Jews, not getting into that in detail. Taking an animal to a vet to be neutered. Selling weapons. Are Jews allowed to sell weapons? To whom? Maybe it's a gun range. Maybe you're selling them to a hunting and shooting and fishing group. Or are you selling them to people who will use them for negative reasons? What about a Jewish doctor advising a woman on abortion options? That's a very relevant question for medical people. What about an anesthesiologist helping out with an abortion? A pharmacist assisting with an abortion? And then there's the issue of Eva Min Achai. Now, let's focus here on a particular source. What is Eva Min Achai? Eva Min Achai is the issue of taking a limb from a live animal. So you'll tell me, well, come on. I never in my life took a limb from a live animal and gave it to someone else to eat. And the answer is, yes, you did. You ate eggs. Now, eggs? The answer is yes. Eggs are eva min achai. Eggs are something taken out from a live animal, which you then eat. Now, are eggs kosher? Of course their eggs are kosher. Kosher eggs are kosher for Jews. So are you allowed to give an omelette to a non-Jew? Now, this may seem like a strange question to ask, but let's just look here, and we'll see in the Pisrei Tshuva that it's actually a fascinating shaila. Have a look here. Let's look at a few lines of this Pisrei Tshuva with me. He says the following, On Shulchan Aruch, L'chayre yesh la'asor beitzim l'bnei Noach. He says, I don't see any reason why non-Jews are allowed to eat eggs. Bizman Hashas, this should have been apparent even back in the day. The Gabi Yisrael, Gali Atari of Eloi v'Lebnei Noach. The Torah says to Jews, you can eat eggs. It specifically talks about eggs. You can eat the egg, or chase away the mother bird, and eat the egg. So eggs are, if you like, an exception to Jews in the Torah, but not to non-Jews. It never says that for non-Jews. They're even nechai. K'moy mepar chesed ashali Yisrael v'loy l'bnei Noach. Just like an animal, if you shecht an animal, shechita permits an animal to a Jew. But for a non-Jew, the animal has to be dead and still. With after Shechita, the animal could be twitching a little bit. As far as a Jew's concerned, it's dead. It's shechted. I can eat it. There's no Eiv Minachai. But for a non-Jew, that's not good enough. It has to be dead and stop moving completely. The Rambam holds, the Rambam's going to be harsh on eggs, okay, Mehilchas Malachim, De'afilu Behema Tahira, even a kosher animal that a Jew could eat, or Kasher Yisrael, that a Jew is mutter to eat, been shechted, as Suram Mefarchetel Ebnei Noach, if it's still twitching, it's not good for a non-Jew. The leisle mi ikamidi, and this is a fascinating concept. What's mi ikamidi? The Gemara suggests that maybe there's a rule. It's called mi ikamidi. Is there really anything? What does that mean? Is there anything that is permitted to a Jew, but prohibited to a non-Jew? Or by definition, if it's permitted to a Jew, it must be allowed for a non-Jew. Or do we say no? It's just different rules. So the Rambam doesn't hold by that. He says something can be permitted to a Jew and still prohibited to a non-Jew. And even those who disagree, they do hold me a committee, that if it's kosher for a Jew, then it must be kosher for a non-Jew. When it comes to a trefa animal, or a non-kosher animal, asura, which is prohibited to a Jew, anyway, Israel, asura lebnei Noach. Now, what does this mean? Imke, hachinami bebeitim, when it comes to eggs, asurim lebnei Noach, lachol apachat beitim terefas. Certainly non-kosher eggs must be treif for a non-Jew. Never allowed to a non-Jew. Well, our Rambam, and for a Rambam, kol beitim asurim, all eggs will be prohibited. Now, he goes on to say, well, what about if there's eggs in a recipe? Can you give a Jew a food, a non-Jew food with eggs in it? And he says, you can't turn around and say that maybe it's bottle, maybe it's nullified in some way. Sorry, I'm just going to mute everybody again because there's quite a bit of background noise. Just 1 second, please. Thanks so much. So you can't sit around and say that it's bottled because it's bottled b'shishim or whatever. He says, because those rules don't apply for non-Jews. So he says it comes out very clearly that clearly omelets are prohibited for non-Jewish people. Now, you're probably thinking here, how come I never heard this before? This cannot be correct if the first time I'm hearing this is on a shir from Rabbi Manning on a Wednesday morning that non-Jews can't eat eggs. There must be another angle to this. And the answer is, yes, there is. The reason that you've never heard this before is because of Litnei Iver. We will see that within the rules of Litnei Iver, even if eggs are prohibited for non-Jews, you don't normally have a problem with that. Maybe certain occasions you will, but because of Litnei Iver, you'll see that that resolves the question. So again, something you never even thought of in terms of eggs and Eiv Minachai is potentially a live issue. He says it's okay, by the way, if you sell the eggs because they want to grow chicks, but if they want to eat them, that's a problem. And what about stolen property? Buying or dealing in stolen property from non-Jews is encouraging them to steal. Look at number two. Asur liknot davar gazul min hagazlan. You're never allowed to buy anything stolen from someone who stole it. Basur l'sado, you're not allowed to encourage or help them al shinuyav, in changing it in any way, converting it, kidei shiknei, so that they can buy it or sell it on. If you do these things, you are encouraging, helping people to do averas, and you are guilty of the prohibition of lifnei iver lo titen mirsho. So one of the most common applications to this question of gezeila is, and we had a whole shiur on this, what are you allowed to download from the internet? When is it gezeila? When is it geneva? At this point, most people turn around and say, actually, I don't want to hear the next 2 minutes of the shiur, thank you very much, because it's too concerning. The answer is, don't worry about it. Go and listen to the shiurim we gave on internet and halacha last year. I put a reference, I think, down on the sheets. Yes, down to get to those shiurim as well. But clearly, buying something, encouraging others to sell a stolen item, and working with a thief in that way is going to be a litany of an issue for Jews and, of course, for non-Jews as well. So let's have a look at what litany iver is. This mitzvah that applies so often in life, let's have a look at how it works. Let's look at the structure. Some fascinating questions. It's going to be quite technical, some of it, but it'll help us to work out. You should be able to work out for yourself, hopefully, by the end of the shiur, many of the answers to the questions that I put at the beginning. Okay, so let's have a look now together. Look at the verse with me, number 3. It's a verse in Parshas Kedoshim. Loi sekadel cheresh, do not curse the deaf. Source number 3. Velitnei iva loi siten mirshol, do not put a stumbling block in front of the blind. V'yareitzem elokecha, you must fear God, ani Hashem, because I am God. Now we'll see in a minute the purpose of that last phrase on the mitzvah. So the Chazal in the Sifra immediately pick up and say, what does this mean? Lifnei iver lo titen michshol, lifnei suma badavar. Someone who is blind to an issue, not necessarily a blind person physically, but blind to an issue. Baba amalacha, if they come and say to you, bat ish ploni mahi lekuna, is a Kohen allowed to marry this lady? Al tamalak sheru, don't say yes. For he ain't al absula when you know that the answer is no. You're encouraging them to do something which is bad for them. Hayanotel mincha eit, someone comes to you for advice, says the Gemara, or the Sifra here. Al kitin loy eit sheino genis loy. Don't give them advice which is not suitable for them. Al tani loy seba hashkama, don't say to them, set out early in the morning. Shekhuhu listen when you know that they'll get attacked by robbers. Seba tarayim, go out in the afternoon, vishvil shititrai, because you know that they'll get sunstroke. Al tamilo mechor et chaka, don't say to them, sell your field for kacha chachamor and invest in donkeys. Sell real estate, invest in donkeys. For really, what you're doing, va'at okepalav, you're just trying to sneak around them, v'notele b'menu, and get hold of their land. Meaning you're giving them, consciously giving them bad advice. Ah, shema toma, maybe you'll turn around and say, eitz atova ani noten lo, I meant for the best, I never realized, I didn't know that land was going to become valuable to hang on to. I gave him good faith advice. Hari adava mosul alev. That's why, says Chazal, it says, this is something in your heart and between you and God. Shneimav yireisem elekecha ani Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows if you're really got good kavana or bad kavana. This is something you could hide from other people, but you can't hide it from God. So, interestingly, the pshat in the verse, the simple, straightforward meaning, not simple, but superficial, straightforward meaning is do not give bad advice. And in fact, that's what Rashi says. Litnei iva loisiten mechshol, says Rashi, litnei hatsuma badava loisiten eita she'en ogen etzlo. And he gives the example from the Sifra. Now, let me ask you a question. Why isn't the pshat, don't put a block of concrete in the street in front of a blind person so that when a blind person walks down the street, they'll fall over it? If you did that, did you break this mitzvah? And remarkably, the Minchas Chinuch says, actually, no. You did not break this mitzvah if you trip a blind person up in the street. Look in number 6. V'nira d'potek hazed l'ifnei iver yatzel gamri r'pshuta. It doesn't have a literal application at all. V'imnatan michshol mamash. Even l'ifnei iver, if you put an actual stone in front of a blind person, eina over, you did not break this mitzvah. Now, don't get me wrong. You broke about 15 other mitzvahs. You're not allowed to put blocks of concrete out in the street in front of people to fall over them. There we can list off all the things that you did wrong. We have to raise kamocha and lo samal adam riecha, etc. So clearly this is halakhically completely prohibited, but it's not this prohibition. Why not? Because at the end of the pasuk it says this is something which is hidden from the eye of other people between you and God. And obviously, if a person puts a concrete block in front of a blind person, that's not something which is hidden. That's something which is obvious. So it's not talking about that. So what is it talking about? Giving bad advice. So the Rambam comes in here and says, he extends it one stage further. Well, he doesn't, but he quotes Chazal, and we'll see the Talmudic discussion in a minute. Look at the Rambam, and then we'll get it into the Talmud. Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Tet, Mitzvah 299. He says as follows. She'ziranu mehechshil ketzasnu es ketzasnu be'etze. We're not allowed to mislead other people with advice. The Lashon Sifra, he quotes the Sifra, lifnei suma b'davar, in front of someone who's blind to an issue. That's the pshat. But then he says as follows. V'lav zeh, I'm just focusing in here, v'lav zeh amru shehu kolel gamkein, on a drash level, this prohibition includes also, mishi yazo al aveira. If you help someone else do an aveira, or you salav oisa, or you give them the context to the aveira, ki hu yavi ha'ishahu, okay, that you're bringing this person, She'ivra tavato, he's blinded by his yetzer, by his yetzer ra. Ein sichla has blinded his common sense. V'chaza iver v'yifakel. And he's still blind and you're tempting him. And the yetzer hara is tempting him and you're helping him. V'yazru lahashlim aveirato, and you're helping him to do the aveira, or yachin lo sibet aveira. Udvarim rabim ma'ayit, he says so many things in life, mizeh amin, of this nature, Yomru Bahem Oyvim Mishum Lifnei Iver Loitit in Mishra. He says, watch out, because on a daily basis, there are so many things that you might do that actually cause other people to do Averas. Upshita Dekra, the pshat of the Pasuk is the advice. So you have two levels. On a pshat level, this Pasuk is don't give bad advice. On a drash, on a halachic level, it's don't cause other people to do Averas. So the question is, well, what are the parameters of that? How responsible am I? All those questions that we asked before, if I'm sitting at a checkout and somebody comes and brings tray food through, do I have to refuse to serve them, etc.? Can I help? In what way can I be involved in other people doing Averas? Can I even give a cup of tea to someone in my house who comes to visit who's not going to say Shehakol? And by the way, the Shulchan Aruch says, no, you can't, because of Lifnei Iver, but we'll see soon that the rubric of Lifnei Iver is more complicated than you might originally think. Okay, so let's have a look at the halachic applications of Lifnei Iver, and then you can start working out the answers to all these questions. Source number 8. Let's go into this together. So the Mishnah at the beginning of Avodah Zorah, and it begins talking about non-Jews. The Mishnah says, 8, Lifnei Edehem Shel Oivdei Kochavim Umazalos, before the festival of a non-Jewish idolatry, Shloisha Yamin, 3 days before, Asur Laseit Imahem. You're not allowed to do business with idolaters 3 days before their festival. Okay? And the Gemara, of course, goes on to list, as the Mishnah, what are the non-Jewish festivals? And there's a whole discussion about Christmas, New Year's, all of that kind of stuff which is in there, which we talked about, we had a share once about Christmas time, around those issues. But 3 days before the festival, you can't do business. The Gemara says why. Number 9, and this is the main source in the Gemara in Avodah Zorah dealing with Lifnei Iver. Iboilehu, so they ask the question. Look with me at this Gemara. Mishum harvacho or dil mishum Lifnei Iver loisiv miksha. Which of these two possibilities is the reason that you can't do business with non-Jews? Is it harvacha? What's harvacha? Harvacha is you're getting them to do a good business deal, and then they're going to go to thank their God in church or their temple, whatever it is, and you are going to cause them to mention the name of the Avodah Zorah, which you're not allowed to do. Or is it Lifnei Iver, which is, you are facilitating them bringing this animal as a korban, as a sacrifice, to an idolatrous god. Which is it? Is it that you're causing them to thank the god, or you're causing them, giving them the wherewithal to do the to do this sacrifice? So, just skip out Rashi for now. The Gemara says, L'may nafkimina, why do I care? It's prohibited, so it's prohibited. What difference does it make what the reason is? And the answer the Gemara gives is, de'is lei behemah ledidei. If they already have an animal, if they already have an animal of their own, so then you can say the following. Iyam remishum harvacha, if your concern is that they will thank their God for this business deal, oh, he'll say Baruch Hashem, actually he won't say Baruch Hashem, he'll say Baruch something else. He'll say, thank you that this Jew came along and I did this business deal. That's amazing. So who cares if he has another animal of their own? If he gets another deal, then he'll say thank you for that deal. But if you say the problem is, no, you are facilitating, you're enabling him to give an sacrifice. No, he already had a sheep. You didn't enable it. He already did it, could do it without you. So the Gemara says, really? If he has an animal already, does that mean you're never responsible unless you're a real enabler? If you're just assisting, that's not a problem. If you're enabling, that's a problem. Because if he has it without you, then you're off the hook. Is that true? Ah, Bahatanya, don't we learn elsewhere? Amar Rebbe Nosson, Minayin Shelo Yoshid Adam Kosh Shel Yain LeNozir. Are you allowed to hand a glass of wine to a Nozir? A Nozir is not allowed to drink wine. So the Gemara says, you can't give a glass of wine to a Nozir. Ve'eva min hachai, and you can't serve an omelette, Lebnei Noach, to a non-Jew. Talmud Lomer, how do we know? Lifnei Iver lo titen michshol. Okay. So says the Gemara, surely they could get an omelette without you. They could get a glass of wine without you. The hahacha dechiloi avinan lei, and here if you didn't give it to them, shakli you, surely they would take one of their own. And uka avam mishom lifnei Iver lo titen michshol. It seems that the fact that they have one already doesn't get you off the hook. Says the Gemara, no. Hacha b'mayaskin, on what is the case here of the Nazir? The Kai betray Ibranara. And this is a very important phrase to bear in mind through the whole shir. Trey Ibranara, two sides of the river. The Gemara appears to conclude here, and this is certainly what Rashi understands. which is, when are you liable with this Nazir? This Nazarene is standing on the other side, Nazarite, standing on the other side of the river. And you're handing over wine to them, and they cannot get it without you. If they cannot get it without you, then that's Lifnei Iver. But if they could get it without you, they could go to the shop, they could buy some wine, they have access to it without you, then you're off the hook, says the Gemara. That's not called Lifnei Iver Loisitin Mikshol. Now, if that's the case, and that's certainly the case of most Rishonim understand, that that is the differentiation here, which is, if they can get it without you, you're off the hook. If they can't get it without you, then you're on the hook. So if that's the case, then that resolves half of my problems, right? Because I can turn around and say the following now. Okay, so I'm sitting in the supermarket, and a Jewish woman or man comes through with non-kosher food. So if I don't check out the food for them, will they be able to buy it without me? Of course they will. They'll just go to the next aisle. What will I achieve? I will achieve nothing. They will get it with me or without me. So maybe it's not my problem. Just push it through. Okay? If I invite someone to drive on Shabbos and they're going to drive to my house, if I don't invite them, will they not drive on Shabbos? Of course they'll drive on Shabbos. They'll drive everywhere. So this way they'll drive to me, or they'll drive there, or they'll drive somewhere else. So if they can, if they're going to do it anyway without me, apparently, I'm off the hook. If I don't help this woman to advise with abortion, I mean, obviously abortion is a very complicated topic, many situations one's permitted to have an abortion, but in some situations, if I don't do it, somebody else will. And in all of these cases, in 95% of cases, if I don't assist, then they'll find someone else who can assist. So according to what we've learned so far, that seems to resolve most of these questions. We'll see, it's a bit more complicated than that. But now you know why you've never heard of a problem of selling eggs to a non-Jew. Because if you don't sell eggs to the non-Jew, they'll just go to the shop next door and buy eggs there. So you're not guilty of Lifnei Iver if they could do it without you. Now there are questions, how easy does it need to be without you? What if they could get in a car, drive 6 hours and get it, and then come back? Is that called they can get it without you, or is that practically not called that? That's a discussion. What if the only other paid place they could get it without you is another Jew, who is anyway going to be doing Lifnei Iver? Does that let you off the hook? These are all discussions that we fleshed out more in the earlier Shirim, but that's the basic starting point of Lifnei Iver. If they can get it without you, you're off the hook. Okay, fine. There are interesting questions, like what if you help someone to do a rabbinic Avera? You give somebody food and they don't make a brocha. So that's an Issa D'Rabbanon. So are you guilty of Lifnei Iver on a Torah level if they breached an Issa D'Rabbanon? Or does that have to be, well, if they only did a rabbinic prohibition, then surely I can't be more guilty. I'm a facilitator. How can I be more guilty than them? And the answer is, some Mephoshim say no, because Lifnei Iver is any bad advice. Anytime you give bad advice to someone, you're guilty of Lifnei Iver, and therefore so too, even if your bad advice is to do an Issa D'Rabbanon, the fact that they're breaking a rabbinic law doesn't mean that you didn't break a Torah law in order to get them there. So that's an interesting discussion. And a parallel discussion with non-Jews is there any such thing as a rabbinic law with a non-Jew? This issue of Eivim in a Chai. What about Eivim in a Chai on a Drabonon level? Does that affect non-Jews? Do non-Jews have to keep rabbinic law? Why? Do they have to listen to the rabbis? Why do you and I have to keep rabbinic law? That itself is an interesting question, which I don't have time to get into now. But that's also a discussion. By the way, just in parentheses, this issue of eggs, that the Torah went out of its way to specifically allow eggs for Jews, but didn't say that for non-Jews. There is another food that this applies to, and we had a discussion about this, which is the question of honey. And I'll just maybe throw this out for you in parentheses. Is honey kosher? And the answer is, of course honey's kosher. You're thinking to yourself, well, eggs are not kosher and honey's not kosher. What's going on here? No, honey is definitely kosher. But why? Why is honey kosher? Doesn't honey come from a treif animal? And anything that comes from a treif animal is treif. Milk from a camel is treif. So why is honey from a bee kosher? So you presumably already know the answer to this question. But actually, there are two answers to this question. One answer is, well, it's just an exception. The Torah says that honey is an exception to the rule. Because even though it comes from a bee, it's okay. Another answer is that actually the honey doesn't come from the bee. The honey comes from the pollen. The bee's just the kind of the facilitator to get the pollen to turn into the honey, and therefore it's fine. One of the nafkaminas to that is the issue of what's it called? Royal jelly. What is royal jelly? Royal jelly is something that is excreted from the gland of the queen bee. So are you allowed to eat royal jelly or not? It's a health food. It's meant to be extremely healthy, although you can take other people's advice on that. So if you say that honey's just an exception, anything from a bee is fine, then royal jelly's fine. If you say no, it's okay because it comes from the pollen, well, the royal jelly doesn't come from the pollen. And therefore, even on issues like honey, there are some really fascinating applications to that. Actually, I saw that the Herbert just put on honey and milk. Milk's a whole different question, okay? Whether it's an aver, whether it's a limb of some kind from the animal. But honey we just talked about. I've got a couple of other questions. Serving non-Jews eggs in a hotel, we talked about that. Okay, that's a longer question which I haven't got time to get into right now, but let's go on for now. Okay, so let's go back to the sheet and open it up and see where we're leading. Okay, fine. What is my liability when it comes to selling things that could be used for multiple purposes? This is like the gun question. Someone comes up to me, they want to buy a gun. It's big money. Am I allowed to sell a non-Jew or a Jew a gun? So what do I think? They say, well, I'm a hunter. I like hunting with a gun. Is that okay or is that not okay? So look at the Gemara. The Gemara says the following, number 10. Rav Ashi havalei hahu ava. Rav Ashi had a forest. He owned trees. Zavni lebnei nura, and he sold it to non-Jews who use the wood for idolatry. So amalei Ravina. Ravina said to him, the Rav Ashi, ha'ika lebnei iva loiti te mechshal. How can you sell wood to non-Jews that are going to use it for idolatry? So Amalei said to him, no, roiv eitim lahasaka litnu. Most wood is used for firewood. The fact that there might be a non-Jew that will use this for idolatry, that's not my problem. So here you see another principle which is laid down in the halacha, specifically in Shemitah year. Are you allowed to sell a cow to a Jew during Shemitah year? Well, they might eat it, they might use it to work the land. But the answer is, since it could be used for both, and you've no reason to suspect them, obviously if they turn around and say, I'm going to use it to plow, that's a problem. But if there's no reason to suspect them, the fact that it could have both uses is fine. So too with this wood. If it's something which is primarily used for prohibited purposes, like a plow, you want to sell a plow during Shemitah, so then you have to already know that they're not going to use it for something bad. So that would apply to all of these shilas when you're selling things or helping non-Jews with things or Jews. What could it be used for? Do they look suspect? How does that work? And then there's a question of how far back do you go? What if I'm just causing the guy who's fitting the marble in the idolatrous temple? What if I'm just driving the truck that delivers the marble that goes in the laundry? What if I'm just building the truck that the guy drives to? How far back do you go on Lifnei Iver? So again, the Gemara discusses this. Look at number 11. It says Livona. What about incense? Frankincense. Mochrim lahem chavila. You can sell it wholesale, says the Gemara. Ah, v'leichosh dilma azel umazmin la'achrin umakatri. Maybe that non-Jew that you sold it to wholesale will sell it to a non-Jew who will use it for avodah zara. So Amar Abaya. Rabbi responds, no. Responds as follows. Alifnei mepakdina. We are concerned about lifnei iver. Alifnei de lifnei. We're not worried about lifnei de lifnei. It's too far down the chain. So here you have another restricting factor, that I have to be the one who is right there at the interface with the Aveira. If I'm down the chain somewhere, I'm causing the person to cause the person to cause, so then I'm not liable for that. Maybe with one exception, which is if I do something which makes another Jew do lifnei iver, which is source 12, which I'm not getting into now, then that might be indeed a problem, because I can't help a non-Jew to do lifnei iver because they're not obligated, but a Jew would be more of an issue. Okay, so a lot of that is quite technical. I don't want to get into more of the technical details then. There's a discussion about active and passive lifnei iver, but what I really want to get into is the next level down. By the way, with non-Jews, there is no concept of bar mitzvah. So whereas with a Jew, you could turn around and say, well, this is a child. They're not obligated in mitzvahs. A non-Jew is obligated in mitzvahs, sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, as soon as they become aware and conscious and able to make a choice. So that's an interesting detail, that bar and bat mitzvah is not relevant to them. But the next level goes as follows. And I just want to be structured about this so it's clear. The first question we asked is, can they get it without you? If you're only assisting but you're not enabling, then you're off the hook. And this is how many of the Mephoroshim seem to Paskin. Look at this Tosfos here in number 15. I want to contrast these two Tosfosim as follows. Look in number 15. Minay shelo yoshid adam kos yayin lenazir. Why you can't give wine to a nazir? Says the Tosfos as follows. Lefize, according to this, asul lahoshid lemumarim la'avodis kochavim. You're not allowed to give stuff to a mumar la'avodis kochavim, a Jew who's going to worship idolatry. Davar Issa, or a non-Jew, who you can't give them anything which is Asa. Afa pisha hu shalahem, even if it belongs to them, you can't facilitate it. Ki hadava yadua sheachlu, if you know they're going to eat it, you're going to use it. For hu nes alahem she Yisrael gomor, even an apostate Jew, it's prohibited for them too. They're called a Jew. Umayri, but this only applies, first of all, he gives the rule that we saw before. The makam shalo yuchal likach, Imlo Yoshitlo, only in a place where they can't get it unless you give it to them. Okay? Ukedemastik, the Kaitreibrenara, because we said this is only on two sides of the river. Fine, that's what we understood before. But then another Tosfos says something else. The Gemara, let me give you a little bit of context here. The Gemara has a case in Hilchas Shabbos as follows. Let's say there's a man inside the house, a man or a woman inside the house, and someone outside the house. And they hand something over from the outside to the inside. And I just stand there with my hand out like this. So the Gemara there at the beginning of Masechet Shabbos, which is discussing Akira and Hanacha, it was picked up here, it was put down there, says if I just stand there like this with my hand out, and somebody picks it up outside, takes it in, drops it in my hand, I didn't do anything. I did nothing at all. So Tosfos says as follows, well, what about Lifnei Iver? I'm standing here while the other Jew breaks Shabbos in front of my eyes. Don't I have a problem of Lifnei Iver? So look at what Tosfos is going to open up a whole new vista here in this whole Shaila. Have a look at number 16. The Im Tomer, if you want to ask, the Haka Ava Lifnei Iver, surely this Jew who's standing in the house watching another Jew be Machal Shabbos is liable for Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver lo sitim v'shol. And even if you say, no, this is one of these two sides of the river cases, they could get it without me, they can break Shabbos without me, they can put it down somewhere else. And therefore you think you're off the hook, because there's no Lifnei Iver, because you're not enabling. Because we said, this case of the Nazir is the two sides of the river. Says Tosfos, no, I've got news for you. There's another layer. Mikal Markam Issa the Rabbonon Miha Ika. There is a whole new layer to this issue of enabling people to do Averis, which is a rabbinic level. Shechayev Lahafrishoi Mi'issa. Because even if you're not on the hook for Lifnei Iver technically, you have an obligation to stop them where you can from doing an Avera. Even if you're technically not enabling it, you still have to try and stop it. What is this rabbinic mitzvah? Maybe it's a layer of Lifnei Iver beyond. Maybe it's tochacha on some level that I have to try and actively stop people doing averas. Maybe it's some kind of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. I'm responsible for you. So even if I'm off the hook, I still can't do anything which will enable or assist you even on a rabbinic level in doing the mitzvah, doing the avera. So the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to this question, gives you a very sort of a very back and forth picture. Let's look at the Psak Halacha, and then we'll try and understand what this really means, Lemaisa, for you and me. Look at number 17. So again, when it comes to Lifnei Iver and non-Jews, Devarim Sheheim Yuchadim Lemin Mimini Avodas Kechavim. You have something which is specifically, says the Shulchan Aruch, used for Avodah Zarah. Sheba Oisam Akim, in the place that's relevant. Asur Limkor La'ovde Oisam Avodah Zarah. You can't sell it to those non-Jews who are going to use it. You have incense, or you have an animal, or whatever it is, communion wine, wafers. Are Jews allowed to sell communion wafers? Yes or no? If you say, and you're going to have to work out, is Christianity Avodah Zarah? Is it not Avodah Zarah? What is transubstantiation? How does that whole thing work? Are they Catholic? Are they Protestant? Not getting into all of that now. You are not allowed to sell it to them if they're going to use it for Avodah Zarah. Sheba Osamach. Fine. In comes the Ramah and says, and by the way, the Shulchan Aruch didn't say anything about if they could get it elsewhere. They just said, you're not allowed. Says the Rama, V'yesh Omrim, Hada Oselim Korlehem Dvarim Hashaykh and Avodasam. When it says you're not allowed to sell them stuff, Hainu Davki Im Ein Lahem Acherim Kiyotzibah. It's only if they don't have any others. Here, this is the application of the principle. If they can get it without you, then you're off the hook. Or Shelo Yuchlo Likno B'Makam Acher. But if they can get it somewhere else, mutalim kol lahem kol davar, then you can sell whatever you like. And as I mentioned last week, the Jews were known around the Vatican, many of the people selling all the little crucifixes and the little things that everyone's using, a lot of those are Jewish families. What are they basing this on? They can get it somewhere else. Not my problem. Because since I'm not enabling, I'm just one of 100 different options, it's not my problem. And then he says, V'yesh machmirim. There are those who are machmir. V'nagu l'hakak as far as Rishonim, but most people are lenient, like the first opinion I gave. V'kol bal nefesh, but if you want to be on the safe side, yachmir l'asma, you should be machmir on yourself. Well, what's going on? Why is he going back and forth like this? He said, it's okay, but there are people that say it's not. But we really say it is. But if you want to be careful, then it's not. Like, what's going on there? So the Shach explains, and this is, the basic way forward on this. The Shach explains as follows, that when it comes to Jews, we have this extra layer of rabbinic obligation. Meaning, even if they can get it somewhere else without me, I have an obligation to try and prevent them from doing Averis. But when it comes to non-Jews, and it says the Shach, when it comes to apostate Jews, then I don't have that second level. All I need to worry about is, can they get it without me or not? And if they can get it without me, then I'm off the hook. So this is a very useful and quite structured way of understanding this. Just to recap, it basically goes like this. That if I'm dealing with a non-Jew, my only relevant question is, can they get it without me? If yes, then I'm fine. If I'm dealing with a Jew, then I have a further level, which is, even if they can get it without me, do I still have an obligation somehow to separate them from doing this Avera? And then we end up, of course, in a fascinating question is, what is the status of non-observant Jews in today's world? The Shach said that if it's someone who is a mumar, it's an apostate Jew, then for this purpose they have the same din as a non-Jew. I don't have to go out of my way. So today a non-observant Jew is not an apostate Jew. They're just a non-observant Jew because they don't have an education in the halacha. So do I still have this, if you like, leniency, or do I now have to say, well, no. Even though they don't know that they have to make a bracha, then I still have an obligation to tell them. Am I allowed to give food to a non-observant Jew who will not make a bracha? So based on what we've seen so far, the answer may indeed be no. Because even though they can get it without me, they can get the food elsewhere, I still have this obligation to them, which I would not have to a non-Jew, or to a real apostate Jew, but I would have potentially to a non-observant Jew. So where does this leave us? So this leaves us actually with a lot of shilas, which are, someone said that they can't hear me. Can you hear me? Can I have a thumbs up from someone? Oh, I'm getting a thumbs up. Okay, so I don't know why people were saying they couldn't hear me, whatever. And a lot of people are telling me, someone's asking this question. If a friend comes around, can't you offer them tea or coffee because they won't make a bracha? That sounds strange, no? And in fact, that sounds almost counterproductive. I'm not going to give somebody a cup of tea just because they won't make a bracha. So let me give you two angles, which I think are very important here, which are used by the modern-day poskim to help us understand this in a more lamaiser way. What is litnei iver? Litnei iver is causing people problems. If I'm setting them up in a way which is going to cause them to do something which is bad for them, what if I'm going to do something which is bad for them, but actually in the longer term, in the bigger picture, is actually good for them? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was asked this question on the tea and coffee point. If somebody comes to my house, and I'm an observant Jew, and I don't offer them a cup of tea or a glass of water on a hot day, they're going to walk out of my house thinking, well, even the most basic, humanity is that you offer somebody a glass of water. Why is this person not doing that? They're going to go away, and it's going to be negative in their connection and understanding and appreciation of Torah and mitzvahs. It could be completely counterproductive. So actually, by not answering, not offering them the drink because they won't make a bracha, have I actually made a worse problem in the long run? I've caused a bigger problem by not giving them the drink. So what did I achieve by that? So too, Rav Moshe Sternbuch has a question, which is if you're running an outreach Shabbos, but they're going to drive anyway on Shabbos, and I'm inviting them to come to this outreach Shabbos. So in the longer term, in the bigger picture, what am I really helping them, or are I hurting them? So yes, I know they're going to drive on Shabbos, but in the cheshbon of what is good for them in the long term, so surely it's better for them to come and break one Shabbos in that sense, even though I'm not directly enabling it, so that they'll keep you. How do you make that cheshbon? So I want to show you a fascinating Rabbi Kiva Eiger. Rabbi Kiva Eiger, and this would apply to Jews and to non-Jews. Look at what he says. So he raises the question in number 19 as follows, getting a haircut. So a man is not allowed to have his head shaved. You know that probably already. A woman is allowed to shave all the hair off her head with a razor. Okay? A man has to keep the payas. A woman doesn't have to not shave her payas. So any women on the Zoom, if they want to shave all their hair off with a razor, that is halakhically permitted. I'm not recommending it for shalom bias or other reasons, but for a man, I'm afraid it's awesome. So a question comes up in the Shulchan Aruch. Is a woman allowed to shave off the head of a man? Yes or no? So what do you think? Is a woman allowed to shave off the head of a man? So you're saying no. So have a look in number 19. If you're a woman barber, is there a word for a woman barber? A barbera, maybe. But look in number 19. Isha she'eina b'mitzvah hakafa. A woman who is not commanded in the prohibition of shaving off the hair. Okay? So women are not included in that prohibition. Everyone agrees on that. Women are allowed to shave off their hair. The Yesh Omrim, there is an opinion, She'af al pisha muteret lahakip peyed rosha, even though she can shave off her head, Asura lahakip peyed rosha ish, she can't shave off a man's head. Afilu hu kofi, even if he's a child. Why not? Well, it's lifnei iver. He goes in the barber, he sits down on the chair, and she makes him have his hair shaved off, because having your hair shaved off, even if you're passive, even if you're the shavee, if that's the expression, that's still breaking a mitzvah min haTorah. So she can't do it. Lifnei iver, right? Now, let me ask you a question. Could he go somewhere else to have his hair shaved off? Yes, he could. So you're off the hook for lifnei iver on a Torah level, but what about this issue of misayeha, where we're making this balance between long-term gain, short-term and long-term gain? So look at what Rabbi Kiva Eiver says. And this opens the doors for a fascinating understanding of lifnei iver. So he says like this, Ulai yesh lomar, you could argue here as follows, Debezeh leke issa, there really is no problem for this woman to shave off the man's head. Midin mitzvah afrisha, meaning he could get it elsewhere. We know there's no lifnei iver on a Torah level. So we're worried she's causing him to do aveiras? No, da'adarabba, on the contrary, the mashehima galechet ota, when she shaves off his hair, Bezeh mafrishato, she's actually helping him, not hurting him. How so? The imloy haita magalechet also, because if she didn't do it, haya magalech ba'atmo, he would shave off his own head. The haya over the base level, and then he'd make do two prohibitions. Because if he shaves off his own head, he's the shaver and the shavee. He did two averas. The nikahu makif, the alide shehi magalechet, by her shaving his head, she's saving him from one of those averas. So isn't that it's an interesting application there? It's saying that even though she is causing him to do one avera, she's actually saving him from even more problems, from doing two averas. So once you apply that and actually go into what is the long-term benefit, cost-benefit analysis of what I'm about to do, so that throws a different light on these lifnei iver shilas. And again, once you've already got through the first hurdle, which is that they can get it without me, so maybe then you're able to apply this in a more kind of weighed out way in terms of what is the long-term benefit. And that's exactly what Rosh Shlomo Zalman says. You can give food to somebody who will not make a bracha, because the downside of them being insulted is actually worse than the downside of them not making the bracha. And that's why, that's halachically how that is weighed up. And many poskim say the same idea on the issue of the Shabbos as well, especially if you give them the ability to not have to drive, they can stay over, they can live close by, whatever, stay close by. So that helps as well. Okay, fine. A few questions have come up here. Someone says here, I knew someone who would buy Catholic large glass candles at a dollar store, wipe off the Catholic paint symbols and use them as yahrzeit candles. Oy vey. That's interesting. Very interesting. You know, Jewish people are so, innovative. So the question is, are these large Catholic glass candles actually things which are designed for Avodah Zarah? Are they dedicated to Avodah Zarah? That's actually a detailed Avodah Zarah question. I'm not a post-sec and I'm not answering this question specifically, but I think it's probably fine, because I don't think what they have them in the store, they've been designated yet specifically for Avodah Zarah, they're just candles, but I don't know. You have to ask your local Orthodox Avodah Zarah expert, if that's not an oxymoron in terms. Someone said, can you invite a non-religious Jew for a Shabbos meal? So that's what we've been discussing here. Let's just look at the last part of this, and then I'll summarize and hopefully draw it all together and make sure that it's clear. The last part of this question is there any situation, let's say it is Lifnei Iver. I can't get out of it. It's Lifnei Iver, I am going to be guilty of breaking a mitzvah in acting with this person. But is there any circumstance in which I'm allowed to do a smaller mitzvah, a smaller aveira rather, to break a smaller mitzvah in order to help someone else do a bigger mitzvah? Let's say I can't get out of the Lifnei Iver. There's no way around it. I'm enabling it. But you say, you know something? I'm not doing this to hurt them. I'm doing this to help them. Is that okay or is that not okay? Can you apply that kind of logic? And the Shulchan Aruch has a case here which came up actually in the Rishonim of a little girl that was captured, lo aleinu, by missionaries on Shabbos. She was kidnapped and taken away, and they were going to take her off in a wagon and take her to a monastery, a nunnery, and bring her up as a Catholic. And the father had a shaila. Am I allowed to be mechallel Shabbos? They took her on Shabbos. Am I allowed to be mechallel Shabbos in order to try and get my daughter back? If I wait till Monte Shabbos, it's probably too late. But now I can run around, I can bribe people, I can get her back, and I can save her from being taken to this nunnery. And actually the Rashba, I believe it was, responded no. He said it's not pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh means that someone's physical life is in danger, not someone's spiritual life. That's a different question. The Shulchan Aruch disagrees. The Shulchan Aruch pastors like Tosfos, these are the last two sources on the sheet, 21, 22, and he says no. You are allowed to do a smaller aveira, which in this case is breaking Shabbos, in order to prevent someone being brought up as a Catholic. Because, you know, the damage to her neshama is obviously immense. And you're allowed to do that smaller aveira in order to prevent her doing the bigger aveira. And the Mishnah Berurah paskens this way and says on condition that the other person wasn't negligent, that there's nothing, they didn't cause that to themselves. And it's clear which is the smaller and which is the bigger. So this is again an interesting question. When am I allowed to, if you like, do the wrong thing in order to help someone else do the right thing? And there may be situations in which that is relevant. As well. This comes up, by the way, in Kiruv Shilas, for a rabbi to stand up and give a shiur in front of a group of people who are not dressed according to the laws of Tzniut is a halachic problem. It's even if the rabbi's not looking, even if the rabbi is, God forbid, blind, to give a Torah across in front of people who are not dressed properly is itself a rabbinic prohibition. The question is, however, are they allowed to do that in order to engage the group of Torah so that the long term, they're not negligent, they realize that they're not dressed in accordance with the halakha. Even if you say, please come modestly dressed, what they dress like will still not be according to the halakha because they don't know. But the long term benefits when you're helping them is an enormous factor as well. So that's part of that whole shaila. People sometimes ask this question, how are you allowed to give over a shir when the people are dressed like that? And the answer might be this cheshbon. You're allowed to do sometimes something which is a small aveira to help someone do a bigger mitzvah, as long as they're not negligent in what they're doing right now. Anyway, that's a side issue, but it's part of the whole cheshbon. So let's summarize, because we've talked a lot about detail. I said it was going to be a technical shiur. Next week's going to be much more hashkafa based, but this is very halacha lemaisa. And go through now all of the scenarios I gave you at the beginning, all of those like 30 scenarios. Are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to do this? And ask the following basic structured questions. Question number one, could they get it without me? If they could get it without me, then it's probably not Lifnei Iver on a Torah level. Okay, that's question number one. Then question number two is, if they could get it without me, So I'm off the hook on Lifnei Iver on a Torah level. Is there then this next level of a Durabonim, what they call Mesayeha, that I have some obligation proactively to help them not to do Averas? And there will be different scenarios. If somebody is a Jew as opposed to a non-Jew. A Jew I do have to help, a non-Jew, less obligated. An apostate Jew, a non-observant Jew, how that works, if they know it's wrong, if they don't know it's wrong. And then at the end we have these cheshbonot, we could maybe else away when, on the second question, is am I actually helping them in the long term? Am I doing something wrong in order to help them in a bigger way? So that's all part of that cheshbon. So look back through that list, see if you can then work out what the answers to all these questions are. Are you allowed to sell meat during the 9 days? Are you allowed to sell shatnas to people who will, etc.? And hopefully you will be able to answer those questions yourself. I'm just looking at a couple of other questions here. Somebody pointed out that kidnapping is compared to murder. I'm not sure. Rape is compared to murder, but the kidnapping of this little girl on Shabbos, it was obviously tragic, but her health would not be in danger. Now, it's interesting. A few of you have said that you couldn't hear through the shear. I wasn't aware of any particular problems, but who knows what the internet does and doesn't do. Some people said it went quiet, other people said it was okay. I apologize if you lost me a little bit in the middle, but hopefully that sets out Lifnei Iver. Next time you make an omelette, think of this shear, and you're okay, but if your next door neighbor wants to join you and they're not Jewish, then give a little bit of thought to whether you're allowed to share your omelette with them or not. As based on what we've said today. Next week, please God, we will get into the much more hashkafic question about the Avot and Torah from the Avot, and then after that we will get into the rather knotty issue of polygamy and how that affects us today. We'll talk about that then. In the meantime, I wish you a very good week. Thank you very much for your sponsorship. I appreciate it very much, and please feel free to be in touch if you have any questions. Have a great week.
Thank you.
All the best.